The World Health Organization defines addiction as a chronic relapsing condition. Dahab Private Hospital recognizes that addiction is a multifaceted illness affecting an individual's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, and practical well-being. With 28 and 90-day residential rehabilitation programs and Dahab's accredited private health fund approved treatment service, you or your loved one can get the help you need to navigate the rehabilitation process to regain control, to overcome that addiction, and to take back your life. If this resonates, then take the first step and call Dahab Private Hospital for addiction treatment. Addiction is treatable and recovery is possible. 1-800-329-422 or dahab.com.au. Dahab is one word, D-A-Y-H-A-B, dahab.com.au. Hi everyone, welcome to the U Project. That's 2 meter Peter in the background. You know it's 2 meter Peter. 2 meter Peter. He's in the studio with me.
That's
are you glad I did that?
That was great.
I'm so glad. But I would really like you to do that when he walks out of the conference.
Am I the first guest to have a theme song too?
Yeah.
I'm stoked with that. That's
You're probably the only one. Are you excited that you're talking at the U Project Conference on February 23?
Very much so, mate. Can't believe that it's only, what, 2 and a bit months away?
It's not very far away at
it's
all.
Exciting.
And so while we're talking about the U Project, seeing as you brought it up, nice segue. Okay, I may have brought
straight
it up.
Straight into it.
Until this Friday night, everybody, that is, so what would that be?
This will go up Thursday night.
So what's the date? 4th, 5th? So that'll be the 6th. So if you're listening to this after the 6th, sucked in. Sorry.
Tickets will hopefully still be available.
Tickets will still be available, but until midnight this Friday night on the 6th Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time or whatever it is.
I think that's
correct.
It. Yeah.
It'll be $97, so we hope you can come along. It's at Burwood and great lineup, lots of great people. It's at Deakin University. It's going to be awesome.
Hopefully,
what are you going to talk about? I know you don't need to know yet, but give us a bit of a taster of what you might. You can talk about your professional dance career, or
possibly. Yeah, I'd like to start with you doing a live rendition of that song.
I'll do your walk on music. Perfect. Live with some maracas, just a Mexican theme.
Yeah,
sombrero. Nobody needs any of that. It's all right. Everybody's just like, fuck, I'm out.
Yes.
No, I won't be doing any of that.
Now, I was thinking, I haven't quite bedded it down, but I think I'd probably like to talk about imposter syndrome, given I am one of the biggest imposters getting around. I thought it's kind of meta and relevant to, I think, a lot of people.
That is a really...
Yeah.
That is a really good... Every time I talk about anything in that space, we get a lot of feedback.
Mm.
And why do you feel... When do you most feel like a fraud? Only when you're awake?
Yeah. When I'm conscious.
From when I get out of bed till bedtime.
It's usually, I've tried to pinpoint it down to usually when I'm doing something I haven't done before.
Mm.
So I'm trying something that I don't know the outcome, or I'm having a conversation with someone that I've never spoken to before, or I'm speaking at a conference that's the first time they've ever run the conference, for example.
Yeah, and by the way, don't fuck it up.
Exactly. And so all of a sudden you're like, well, I've never done this before, so why would I be qualified to do this? So who am I to do this thing?
Yeah.
I'm a fraud, I'm a fake, I'm a phony. Yeah. So it's usually, for me, when I'm doing something I've never done before.
Yeah. And Craig's had 150 guests and there's only 8 speakers speaking. But again, so you are...
No pressure.
You are 12.5% of the total lineup of speakers. But, you know, that's all right. Don't fuck it up. No pressure at all.
It'll be fine.
Do you think we overcome that, or the volume just changes on it?
I don't think you overcome imposter syndrome, and I don't think you don't crush it or eliminate. You know how people talk about crush your fears and eliminate your fears. Like,
shout out to Gary V.
I don't know if you can. I think we spoke about this last time. I think you sort of dance with them and you figure out ways to interact with them.
Yeah.
And see them and hear them and acknowledge them and the voices that are telling you that you're a fraud or a fake, and then you kind of rebut them in a way and say, okay, I see you, but also like, what about this?
Yeah.
And that was that kind of imposter two-step that we spoke a little bit about last time, which is like, step one, what's it saying to me? What's my imposter telling me? And then step two, what am I going to say back?
Yeah.
And actually kind of like hearing it and then leaning into it. And I call that the dance, the imposter two-step. So,
and I think it depends what the environment or what the task or where you're at or who you're around.
Because
sometimes I don't feel like an imposter. or a fraud, and sometimes I do.
Yeah.
And it might be because I'm around people that I think are better or smarter or funnier or all of that, and yeah. I go, yep, well, I'm the dumbest, I'm the whatever, and yeah, I'm fuck, I shouldn't be here,
and that's awesome.
How did I get here? And yeah. And but at the same time, that's the space where you get dragged up. That's yeah. the space where you evolve. And
yeah.
that's that whole, if you're the smartest person in the room, fuck off to another room exactly. where you're the dumbest.
Change the room.
Get out of the room because and that's not the room for you.
Yeah. I don't know if you found this, but what I've uncovered a few times is if I'm feeling like that in the room, if I feel like I'm the dumbest person in the room mm. and I feel like an imposter, there's a fair chance that everyone else in the room is mm. feeling the same way.
Mm.
And so what happens in situations I've been in workshops where we actually talk about it and we realize that every one of us feels yeah. like we're the dumbest one in the room.
Yes.
Which is kind of this amazing realization of like, oh, but I thought you were the smart one. Yeah, no, I thought you were the smart one. And that can be, I think, quite empowering in a way.
And isn't it, when you think about even just this conversation that we're having, how much fucking energy we waste on just dumb shit.
Yeah.
Like, really. Oh, yeah. Like, that's, you know, you're in the room and of all the things that you could be giving energy to and paying attention to yes. and focusing on and navigating in your head, you're yeah. just talking about how shit you are compared to the rest of the room.
Yeah.
And if perchance you are in that space, you are the least skilled or the least knowledgeable or the least whatever in that yeah. space, well, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
So you go, it's like I've said many times, you and I were talking about my entire month of doctoral studies. Yeah. So I'm pretty much nailed it.
You're done.
And you're like, how is it? I'm like, fucking hard. It's yeah. terrifying. But yeah. but it's you know, won't be so hard in 2 months, I hope. And yeah. it will be easier, I hope, in 6 months when I feel like I belong a little bit. Yeah. That just, you know, that's that whole thing we spoke about last night or whenever it was, Melissa, in the group, where yeah. we were talking about you can't become a black belt without becoming lots of other belts first.
Yeah.
And everyone's a white belt in everything. Yes. And whether or not that's public speaking, don't fuck it up, Pete. Yeah. Or whether or not that's, you know, or whether or not that's martial arts or building a brand or business.
Yeah.
We all start as a white belt and go, well, I don't know anything yet. Of course you don't. You haven't done it.
Exactly.
And it's okay that you don't know it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you go into, for example, just to use a metaphor, that martial arts or that dojo environment where you go, well, I know I'm a white belt, everyone else does, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm a white belt and they're expecting black belt output.
Yes.
So yeah. I'm comfortable wearing this white belt.
Yeah.
And we all know what we each are in this environment around this skill, and we all know what we're not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I think that there's some really interesting like unpacking of that in the sense that usually most people around you will be aware you're a white belt, so it's cool.
Yes.
But often it's the story we tell ourselves about where we should be.
Yes.
That actually is the undoing of us. And I think yes. about this a lot in terms of the way we compare ourselves.
Yeah.
And so like what often will happen is, so say someone's thinking about starting a YouTube channel, for example.
Yeah.
They'll compare themselves to someone who's been doing a YouTube channel yeah. for 7 years
yeah.
and got 700 videos yep. and 3 million followers.
Yeah.
And they'll go, oh, I have to hit that level of quality. And it's like, no, that's an unfair comparison.
Yeah.
It's like comparing an Oz kicker to an AFL yes. player. Like yeah. you're not the same.
Yeah.
So you actually, how do you either A, don't compare yourself to anyone and just try and experiment, or B, compare yourself to someone who is at the start of their journey as well, because chances are they're probably just as white belt as you are.
Mm. And I think the question around all, or one of the questions around all of this is, what am I wasting energy on?
Mm.
And this is just,
it's a great question.
You know, you are where you are. So, you know, what, okay, you feel inadequate, you feel insecure. So do you want to give up or do you want to keep going? Because if you want to keep going, then let's just go.
Yeah.
And whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, we spoke to Paul Check the other day and we were having a chat about Paul Check. If anyone got through that, congratulations.
It was great. It was
really good. I'm still trying to figure it out. I listened to it again to and from uni today. I'm going, yep, it was amazing. I thought it was amazing. But anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. But I think we spoke about, oh, that's right. He was talking about failure.
Mm.
And he said, I've never thought of myself as a failure, even though I've done many things that didn't work. It was always figuring out, okay, so that's not the path or that's not the process.
Yeah.
Now I've got more clarity around what's not going to work and what might work.
Yes.
And everything, you know, I think sometimes people might listen to self-help or personal development stuff or this kind of and go, yeah, that's just a technicality or psychobabble. But it's not really, because when you understand truly how your brain works and you truly understand
the power of your mind and your words and your self-talk and the literal physiological consequence that an idea has. So when I tell myself, and my listeners are probably sick of this, but when I tell myself I'm in trouble, but I'm actually not in trouble, but I tell myself I'm in danger, then my body switches on as though I'm in imminent danger. So all my physiology goes into fight or flight and blood pressure, adrenaline, all those things go through the roof. Not because there's any danger, just because my fucking thinking is so powerful.
Yeah.
So when you start telling yourself, I'm shit, and that's the record and that's the fucking Groundhog Day monologue, then that becomes your experience. And it's not about your potential or even your resources or opportunities, but rather just this self-talk. And I think that, you know, that is just a step on the ladder of self-awareness and self-realization and actualization where, you know, like I know that I'm good at some things and I'm bad at some things. Yeah. There's no ego in that or self-loathing. That's just what I know.
Yeah.
I know that I'm a pretty good speaker now, not because I'm a superstar, but because I've done 8 million presentations and I've fucked up 7 million times. You've
done the reps, yeah.
Right, I've done the sets, done the reps, done the work, done the grind, built the muscle, and so here I am.
Yeah.
As a PhD student, I'm shit. That's all right. I'm the white belt. You know, we have to be okay with being a brown belt, a yellow, a purple, a green, a blue belt, a black belt, a white belt, depending on the situation, the circumstance, or the requirement of what needs to, you know, without analyzing and reanalyzing our worthiness constantly. Yeah. It's just it's a fucking ridiculous investment of everything.
Yeah, I think an interesting mental model that I like to play around with based on all this is like framing things as experiments. And so when I frame it as experiments, it feels less permanent and less risky and less dangerous. And it actually feels curious. So it's like, what if I tried an experiment, which was to see how I go with a PhD.
Yeah.
And it might go great and it might not. And I might be awesome at it and I might not. But like to frame it as an experiment in my head is more of a curious open posture and a like, let's see what might happen. As opposed to like, I have to be the very best person at the PhD that ever crossed the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And so I wrote a blog once upon a time that mad scientists aren't mad is what it was called. And it's like mad scientists aren't mad. They're actually just deeply curious. They try stuff. They see what happens and then they adjust variables and they try more stuff. They're just like curiously trying to figure things out. And I think in the Paul Check interview you did, he talked about Edison, I think it was, with a light bulb. And I've heard that referenced numerous times, which is, I didn't fail 1,000 times. It just took me 1,000 steps to figure out how to create a light bulb.
Correct.
I really like that. It's like it's 1,000 experiments.
And I reckon insanity or madness is contextual and relevant to the people in the room. Like you put 10 people like you and me in a room, we're normal. You put me or you in another room, we're crazy. We're
crazy. Yeah, absolutely.
It depends on who else is there. It's like you put a carnivore at a vegan convention, he's going to get killed. And he's a fucking...
They won't eat him though.
No, they won't eat him. They'll use him as fertilizer to grow something. So you've been overseas. You told me you just got back a little while ago. Where were you? What were you doing?
So I was in New York for 3 weeks doing some work with Seth Godin and the team in the Alt MBA.
Tell now for, I reckon, probably 10 or 20% of our audience know exactly who he is. Yep. A couple of 10 or 20% have heard of him and the rest have never heard of him.
Yep.
Just give us the, because I love him. I think he's great. I haven't met him, but I've read heaps of his stuff. And I used to read his blog. I've stopped. I don't know why I've stopped. No particular reason, but literally I read it, you know, Seth's blog every day for 5 years.
Yeah.
Possibly the best blog in the world, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree.
And tell us about him. Who is he? What's he do? And why is he a gangster?
So he's a prolific writer, author, and teacher, I guess is what he calls himself. Most of his books are centered around marketing and teaching concepts around marketing and coaching and how to be more, how to create more interesting work and create meaningful change, essentially. And so he's written, I think, 18 bestsellers. He's written a blog every day for something like 30 years or 20 years. So he's like prolific. And so he, as a result of sort of what he's been doing lately, has started, instead of focusing on writing all these books, actually like how do I create more action as opposed to the passive idea of someone reading a book and they might not take action. So he's built a bunch of online workshops essentially, which are around concepts that he's written about before, but actually like putting them into practice. And so developing an idea and shipping that idea and creating change with a group of people that you might actually have been thinking about for a long time, but you've never actually got off your ass and done it. So high level view of what he is about. So I spent a bit of time with him.
How was that?
Great.
He's great.
It's just any excuse to spend time with someone like that is...
Isn't it awesome how there are certain people that come into your life that you love being around them? And it's not for what they can do for you particularly, but sometimes it might be, wow, I can learn from this person, or I love their energy, or they're funny, or they're just an awesome person.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about necessarily at all in a business sense. But there are people in my life that I don't see very often, but I love being around them because I know that if I'm with that person for an hour or two, it's going to be a nice experience. We're going to laugh.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn something. I'm going to teach them something.
Yeah.
It's going to be win-win. Yeah. And I'm probably going to go away feeling better than I went in. And I probably was excited going in anyway.
Yeah.
And I think it sounds funny. There's this energetic exchange that happens when we are with people who themselves have good energy. And that sounds a little bit weird and out there for me, but I just know there's something that, even if it's not in the words spoken, but you spend, you're one of those people. I like spending time with you.
Yeah.
When I was coming back from uni today and I was thinking about other stuff and I was in my 6 out of 10 headspace, and then I went, Pete's coming. I went to 8
nice.
Straight away.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
It's like, and there are other people who come in, and it's nobody bad, but where if it's someone I don't know and I'm thinking, geez, I hope they're not shit on the mic and I hope they say more than 4 fucking words.
Yeah.
Because they were good on the phone, but sometimes you get someone in a studio, and coming in here, I go, well, I don't have to worry.
Yeah.
Because he can talk and he's a good dude and he's interesting and people like him and I like him and... I just think that it's misunderstood and undervalued how important it is to just spend time with when you can.
Yeah.
I mean that even in a strategic way, because being strategic about relationships is not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
I've got relationships with people that are I'm quite strategic about, in that I want to spend time with them.
Totally.
And I'm being selfish because there's a benefit for me.
Yeah.
I don't want any money. I don't want them to open any commercial doors but I just go, I fucking learn from you, and there's something that happens when I'm with you, you know? So I think that's, something that's almost like an unconscious benefit.
Totally. I think the strategic piece is very real. I didn't have to be in New York, for example, but I chose to put myself there for 3 weeks and spend time with Seth and the team working on the Alt MBA, which is the online leadership workshop we run. And I have a co-host of a podcast that I have, Jen Waldman, and we have a podcast that we do once a week. And so I chose to go and spend time with her. I have a bunch of clients in America and New York, and I chose to go and spend time with them strategically. Like, I didn't have to. I can speak to these people on Zoom, and I do, and speak to them on Slack, which I do, or an email. But the strategy of what happens if I show up for 3 weeks and go and spend time in person with these people.
Yeah.
And there are so many conversations that I could never have predicted happen.
Yes.
And so much work that came out of it that I never would have been able to create from here.
Yes.
Because I strategically went, I'll just go put myself there for 3 weeks and see what happens.
Yeah. And you meet other people and you interact and you connect and you're in situations and circumstances that can only happen when you are physically present.
Exactly. So Jen and I was a great example. So Jen and I catch up, for 2 or 3 hours a week on Zoom. We record a podcast, we have a laugh, and it's all cool. But when I was there in person, we'd spend 9 hours, 10 hours, 11 hours in the same room.
Yeah.
Her doing her work, me doing my work. But you get these little interactions in between, and we have a conversation about this thing, and then we're whiteboarding all of a sudden, and it's this natural progression that you can't really replicate if you're not in the same room.
Yeah.
And so that was awesome. So we came up with a bunch of ideas and projects that we're now going to try and move forward.
I love
it. I was just going to say, all because I showed up in New York.
Yeah. And the thing is, when you do something that you, even going into it, you think, I don't know what's going to come out of this, but that's okay.
Yeah.
In fact, it's good. It's I'm very open and honest about how we develop our business, the U Project and all the other, so there's two components. There's me doing my corporate stuff, which is kind of like my bread and butter job.
Yeah.
But then there's the stuff that we develop. And we've done some things which were awesome and some things where four people and my mum came to. God bless Mary. And, you know, some things that from a business point of view were fucking great and other things that were diabolical. Yeah. And but in the middle of all of that, you're just figuring everything out.
Yeah, a bunch of experiments. And,
you know, we won't say where we're sitting, but even when we launched the U Project conference the other night, we didn't know. I mean, you have no idea.
Yeah.
Will we sell 10 tickets in the next 24 hours or will we sell 200?
Yeah.
Or will we sell more or yeah. will we sell none? Or yeah. have we priced it? Is it, I don't know, where do we, everything's just educated guessing, but yes. also it's experiential learning.
Yes.
I was talking to my group last night and they don't mind me saying this, but one of them was talking about how she's literally been at the coalface of self-help, reading and watching for 5 years while actually doing not much.
Yeah.
And I'm going, it's That's probably time common. To roll up those fucking sleeves, champ, you know? Yeah. And it's not an insult because so many people do it, but yeah. we just, like podcasts like this are good, but for God's sake, if something resonates, if there's a
do something.
If there's a bell that rings, if there's a light bulb or any other fucking metaphor, just go do something. Because yeah. once you step into the doing,
yeah.
you know, you can't get confidence without doing. You Absolutely. Can't learn without doing in an experiential sense. You can't get good at what you don't do. You can't develop skill without behavior.
Yes.
You
yes.
know,
and this is a large part of the premise of the Alt MBA. It's yeah. experiential learning. So you're yes. required to ship a project every day. So there's something due every day. You're putting work yeah. out there every single day. Sometimes yeah. it's just feedback on other people's work. Sometimes it's a response to a prompt. Other times it's like a reflection on what you learned.
Yeah.
But you're practicing putting this into action
yes.
every single day, as yes. opposed to theorizing it, listening to it and thinking yes. about it, but never actually doing anything with it.
And I think also, hearkening back to what Paul was saying, episode 142, Paul Check, if you haven't heard it yet, batten down the hatches when you do, find yourself a comfy chair and maybe take a Valium before you jump in, hashtag just kidding, that. Just kidding,
prepare yourself,
fucking yeah. maybe. He was talking about, or we spoke a lot about stepping out of the programming and I think, firstly, let me say, I think for a lot of people, a job will work well.
Yeah,
because it's predictable and I know when I start and when I finish and yeah. there's 4 weeks holiday and there's, you know, there's a level of familiarity and safety and security and all of those things. And that's not a good or a bad thing. That's how some people are wired. And then there are other people who aren't wired that way. I'm yeah. one of those people.
Me too.
But I think what some people try and do is they try and inhabit the wrong box, right? And you go, well, I'm going to grind this out because, you know, I need to, or I've got these commitments, and I understand all of that, and I'm not saying leave your job and jump into something else tomorrow, but what I'm saying is, what's great about living outside of the typical model of boss, employer, 9 to 5, checking in, checking out, if you can find a way to do that, and this suits who you are, is that all of a sudden you go, I can come up with an idea. I can ring a few people. I can ring Big Pete and go, mate, we're doing this thing February 23. Do you want to talk? And you go, yep, love to. And I go, fucking great. I'm going to pay you $1.30. And you go, no, Harps, don't. Stop. Fuck. I go, all right, $1.50, you fucker. But that's it. Yeah. But literally an idea that came out of Melissa's head, not mine.
Awesome.
Well done, you. And when I went, yeah, that's a good idea. How would that work? What would that look like? Yeah. Who would we get? Which yeah. venue would, you know? And then you go, all right, and then how do we? And then she's got to build all the website shit and the payment gateway and this and awesome. That. And then I need to write some copy to turn it so when people read it, they know it's not too much, not too little.
Yeah.
It's got to be relatable. Doesn't yeah. want to sound too salesy, but it's got to be real.
Yeah.
Right. And then we have a launch date and then we kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. So you come up with an idea and then you go, now, how do we take this thing in my head to a thing in the world
yeah.
that might serve people, that might, one, meet a need in our business, that is make a few bucks and also meet a need in the community, that is stimulate, educate, inspire others. And also I open a door for 2 meter Peter to go, hey, mate, here's 670 people you don't know.
Yeah.
You're going to get to meet them. They're going to get to meet you.
Yeah.
And you're going to have 600, unless you fuck it up, of course, 600 and see what I said there? can't say that, can you? I love you. You're not going to fuck it up. You're going to be amazing. You're going to be amazing.
Hashtag no pressure.
Hashtag no pressure.
It's going to be great.
No, but you know what, mate? If I thought you would, you wouldn't be there. But you're going to be great, and they're all going to be great. You know, but it's just that where it's win-win.
Yeah.
It's win-win. And a month ago, it wasn't a thing. It
wasn't even a thing.
It wasn't a thing.
I love that.
And next year, God willing, touch wood, whatever,
yeah.
Whatever emotional safety net I need,
yeah.
There'll be another one and it'll be a bit bigger and a bit better and we'll learn and we'll fuck up a few things this year. We'll get some things right. Some things will be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we might go, well, we definitely don't need 45 minutes for lunch. We need 60 because by the time everyone gets out of the fucking room and gets a coffee.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
How long is lunch, by the way? Did we say 45?
I think you changed it back to an hour.
Yeah, I think we need an hour. Yeah, I think we, because with a lot of people, you know.
Bathroom break, all that.
Yeah.
Bathroom break and 300 ladies going, fucking hell, can we have another tour? ladies definitely have it harder when it comes to weeing. Hashtag don't know why I went there, but just it's a practical logistical issue.
You're right though. I think like I was the opposite of what I should be, which was I was in the system as an employee of a corporate and a startup for a long time, and was like constantly banging my head against the wall. Like, oh, I came up with an idea.
Yeah.
It's generous. It serves our clients, but like I'm just met with
resistance.
Red tape, resistance, and like bureaucracy. And I was like, this is weird.
Mm.
And like coming out of that, what's been such a surreal realization is, to your point, I can have an idea and it be executed by Friday and be like, how cool is that?
Because you don't need permission. Correct.
You don't need permission.
Correct.
It's awesome.
That's right. And you're going to, you know, sink or swim, and that's okay.
Exactly, yeah.
And even if you sink, you're not really sinking because you learn some shit.
Exactly.
And you go, all right, still the general idea is good, but that's probably not the way it needs to be rolled out or executed.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the beauty of, for me anyway, you know, being able to just build your own thing where if you succeed, you own it. If you fuck up, you own it. If it's great, you own it. If it's not great, you own it. But as long as you're coming from, for me is anyway, as long as you're coming from a good place, you know, we were talking to Maxine the other day, Maxine Windrum, who owns a company called Brava, and who, when she was in her mid-30s, spoiler alert if you haven't heard it, but you know, her challenge was, she, and these are her words, she was 15 years old with really, really big boobs,
right?
And so her challenge was growing up with these in this small framed body with size G breasts and having all of these challenges around the social, the emotional, all that stuff, but on a really practical level, being fitted properly for a bra, because everyone basically got spooned into a double D and they went, well, suck it up. This is, you know, you're a bit weird. You don't really fit. And so there was all this emotional and physical and sociological and psychological stuff around this. And she went, oh, fuck it. I'm going to open my own store.
Wow.
No retail experience, no technical understanding of how to fit bras, no kind of science or anatomy background, or opened it. She's now got the biggest and best business of its kind in the country 10 years later. She's got a thriving online store. She's got six bricks and mortar stores in Sydney and Melbourne. And she just had an idea.
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
And I mean this with complete respect. She's just an average chick. Like, you're an average dude, I'm an average dude. And she just went, fuck, I'm going to go and create my own thing.
Yeah,
and she didn't invent a cure for cancer. She just saw a need.
Yeah, here's a problem. I have this problem. I'm going to solve it. And if I've solved that problem, there's a fair chance that someone else is going to need that problem solved.
Yeah.
So there's I can't remember who said it, but there's this funny saying that I think you'll appreciate, which is the three worst addictions for humans are carbs, heroin, and a full-time salary.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. Well, obviously the heroin is self-explanatory. And the carbs are fairly self-explanatory too. But the full-time salary, what it does is it gives you no feedback on how you're going, what you're contributing. Because if you show up and slack off for an entire week, you can probably get away with it and you still walk away with the same paycheck. If you show up and shoot the lights out and you're awesome and you're amazing and you're meeting all these people and you're coming up with all those ideas and your boss executes on them, you walk away with the same paycheck. So the feedback of like... reward for your effort is like almost non-existent. And when I heard that, and I started thinking about to what you said, which is when it's on me to know that if I try something and it works, I see the reward in air quotes in you know, fulfillment, in the conversations that I have, monetary, whatever. Mm. Or the opposite, which is it doesn't quite go to plan and you see that and you feel that. Mm. Whereas when you're working for a salary, you kind of don't get that feedback at all, which again, like, is good for some people, but others like the stability, and I totally get that.
And I think also in the middle of that, that model of, you know, clocking in and clocking out for 45 years, and no disrespect to anyone who does that, because I do actually think some people, that is their best operating system.
Totally.
But having said that, I think there's a lot of people in that space who don't really want to be in that space, but they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
I'm going, so start somewhere. Do just something. Have a conversation. Have a meeting. Do an online course.
Yeah.
You know, try something and open a door, you know, just to create a little bit of momentum. And it's, I think it's in the stepping out of the normal and stepping into what for you might be a bit abnormal or a bit weird, that where you start to see things differently. And it's when you grow up in a paradigm too, where, like, I grew up where mum and dad had a job and they'd get another job and another job, and so they had a succession of, and that was actually what they were both doing. They were actually, relative to where their parents were, they were killing it.
Yeah.
My dad was managing shopping centres. My mum was a beauty therapist for a long time. Did you know that about me?
I did know that about me.
And then she was a real estate agent and really good at sales. Then they owned their own hardware store and they owned a rest. You know, so that's right. They did step out of job. They did have their own business. But, you know, they were for a long time in that kind of having a job mindset, and it really worked for them. Mm. And based on where they'd come from, they were actually high performers and high achievers, you know. And I think for a lot of people, it's just you've got to be prepared to be vulnerable, be uncomfortable, be uncertain, and be in a place that's unfamiliar. And that's a lot of uns.
It is, yeah. I'd be keen for your thoughts on this too. Jen and I actually, we did a podcast on this the other day, which will come out in the next few weeks, around working for free. Mm. I'd love... So my assertion, spoiler alert, my assertion in the podcast was there's no such thing as working for free.
Mm.
And I'm happy to unpack that, but I'd be like, just to ask you.
Sure.
Do you think about the idea of working for free? Do you get asked about that, what that looks like at all?
I do work for free, but I don't call it work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it technically, like, I would have done in the last year, 3 a week, 150 sessions in the last year, I guess.
Yeah.
For free,
yeah.
For people who, like, I stopped coaching people one on one at the end of 2017,
yeah,
and for money, and I said, I'm just going to. This is, as I've said before, not an invitation to anyone, but for somebody who legitimately are in dire straits, I'll help them.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I can't help everyone with everything, but also, you know, like, if it depends who it is and what it's for.
Yeah.
But if I think there's an organization that they do great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on availability and other commitments and all that kind of stuff. But But I do a lot of work. Depends on what you call work, but is coming up with an idea for an Instagram thing for my audience, where I'll come up with an idea, I'll write it on the whiteboard, I'll take a photo of it, I'll do the right filter thing, then I'll, not filter, but lighting or whatever, then I'll post it, and then I'll reply to people's things. And for me, that's kind of a form of work that I don't get paid for, but I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, but what it does is, apart from the fact that it meets one of my values, which is giving.
Yes.
Right? It ticks that box.
Yes.
And sharing.
Yeah.
It keeps me accountable, because I don't want to get to the point where I take my foot off the gas totally. But it's also me saying to people, you know what, if you, and I mean this from the heart, I've said a million times, if you don't want to buy a book, if you don't want to come to a program or a conference, or and all you ever do is listen to the You Project for free, or look at my stuff on YouTube, or follow me on social media, I'm grateful.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for you.
Yeah.
And when that's real, that's not just a line.
Yes.
That's real.
Yes.
You know, like when people come up to me, randos, God bless you, and they'll go, oh, da, 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 and they've never been anywhere, done anything but listen to podcast, and I go, thanks for the support. And I see it as support.
Totally, yeah. So I think a few things on that. Like, so Seth would say, Seth has said before, the only time you should work for free is when it's a gift to your community.
Yep.
A generous gift to your community, which I think is exactly what you just described.
Yep.
And what I wonder is, what I've been noodling on thinking about is that we get paid in other ways, right? Mm. Like the common response is, it's free work because I'm not being paid for it.
Yes.
But actually we get paid in fulfillment. We get paid in joy. Yes. We get paid in experience, in learnings, in satisfaction, in being integrity with ourselves. And so this is where I think that notion of there's no such thing as free work exists, because in some way, whatever we're doing, whether money is changing hands or not, we're getting paid in learnings or in joy or in fulfillment.
Mm.
And then I think the opposite side is, so it's either like we're getting paid or we're like charging ourselves something because someone else is getting something out of it and we're not.
Mm.
So if we're doing something for the sake of someone else that we're not necessarily in agreement with or in alignment with and we're not being paid for, it's actually costing us something.
Mm.
So it's either costing us something or we're being paid, in air quotes again, in some way, but doesn't have to be monetary. And I think certainly for myself, and I know a lot of other freelancers, have had a hard time getting their head around getting paid in ways that aren't just money.
Mm. I think that's, for me, that's part of my my spiritual life is service and love. And so that's why I don't think work or life or spirituality or even psychology, emotional physiology for that matter, I don't think any of it really operates in isolation.
No, I totally agree.
So for me, it's, we're sitting here and it's 3 o'clock-ish on a, what day is it?
Wednesday.
It's 3 o'clock-ish on a Wednesday, and at 4:30 I'm at the gym and I'm meeting John, who I trained yesterday, who I've trained for heading towards 2 years, never been paid a dollar or a cent, and I couldn't be happier and I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't mean this, this is not about me, but this is just to an example. So like Beth, the crab's wife, remember the crab, all that happened.
Great story.
So she said to me, you know, we met at the gym a week ago for like a PR thing for Victoria, for Ambulance Victoria. And the Ambos, who are amazing, were there, and the crab and I, a couple of people. And Beth gave them a present, which was, I better not say what it was, alcohol. and she didn't give me any, obviously, because I don't drink. And she goes, we don't know what to get you. It's like, what on earth can we get you? And I said, you know what? The biggest present for me really...
Cheesecake.
...is other than... All right. Okay, yeah, sure. The got me? Biggest. Yeah, the second biggest present is that the crab's alive.
Right.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like it doesn't even come into my mind. Of course. And I'm not being humble or...
No.
...doesn't even come into my mind that, one, gift. Anyone needs to thank me. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Do you know how excited I am that someone that I love is alive,
still alive. Yeah.
And I got to play a little role in that.
Yeah.
This is like the best present in the world.
Yes.
You can do anything for me or give me anything that comes close to that.
Yeah.
And that's not me being bloody noble. That's the truth. It's that's true. Really how I feel.
Yeah.
And then with Johnny, who's gone from training in a wheelchair to walking and driving walking with sticks.
Awesome.
He's slow as fuck. Hurry up, will you, you old timer? Fucking hell. I love him. But I get more joy in terms of me filling up my love tank and my emotional and spiritual bank balance way more than me training some rando for $1,000 an hour three times a week.
Yeah. And so that's why I think it's worth everyone like expanding the frame of payment to be like,
yes,
what am I getting paid for doing this thing?
Yes.
And it might be, well, I'm not getting any money, but I'm getting like unbelievable satisfaction and joy. So hell yeah, I want to do this project or start this thing.
Well, I just, and I won't mention numbers, but we, just before you came in here, can I say, I'm sure I can say this. Melissa, just edit it if I can't. But I just got a message from Victoria Police who want me to do some work with them, and I'm really honored, right? And for me, that's exciting. Like I, and it's quite a bit of work.
Yeah.
And I was talking on the phone with somebody from there, and they're like, well, it just depends on logistics and money. And I said, you know what? Like, I really want to do it. So I don't care that much.
Yeah.
I go, this is a really bad business move for me to say this, but I don't care that much
because
I want the work or I want to work with your members because I think you're amazing.
That's awesome.
And I think what you do is amazing. And for me to put my toe in that pool and to help people work through some of the stuff that on an individual level you all need to, for me, it's an honor. Yeah. It really is an honor.
Awesome.
So they're like, great. But apart from the fact that you're doing something that, you know, hopefully ticks a few boxes, but how often when you do something like that, do you open a door, and not because you're being, there's an ulterior motive, but you open a door and it turns into something really financially rewarding anyway.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's like this idea of showing up with generosity is just even still so underrated.
Mm.
Is, can I show up generously and help and serve other people? Mm. Like I literally write on my to-do list, you know, generously serve Craig Harper. That was on my to-do list today.
Mm.
And so that's what I see my role as being sitting in this podcast. It's not about me getting anything out of it. It's not about me finding out more information from you so that I can run away and steal it.
Mm.
It's like, I'm here to serve you in this moment, and I'm sure you're probably doing the same with me.
Mm.
And so like this posture of generously serving, I think, to your point, you don't seek the financial return, but I have faith that if I invest in myself and take myself to New York and generously serve people, work will come out of it. Like that just can't help but happen because of the way that you show up. I think like, I don't know if that's a woo-woo of like putting too much faith in the universe, but I think that's real.
And I think, like I think to myself, I don't know if anyone else thinks like this, but because I'm, because of my situation, which is I don't have a wife and I don't have kids and I don't have a lot of financial responsibilities that a lot of other people do.
Yeah.
I don't need lots of money.
Yeah.
So I'm good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I wear $10 shorts. I wear $10 black t-shirts. Yeah. I train at a gym that costs me a dollar a day because it's fucking, I don't know, $8 or $10 a week.
Can you please clarify for people that you have multiple sets of shorts? Just because it seems to be a question that keeps coming up. No,
I've only got the one and they really smell like my nuts. So you get your head around that.
Ew. Well,
of course I've got lots of pairs.
Yeah, I know, but it's a question that keeps coming through.
Really? I have literally got about 20 pairs of these camo shorts that I wear. So
it's a fair question.
But, you know, I get to the point where I go, I'd rather do something that I love to do for free than something I hate to do for lots of money.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can do both. You can make money and do something that you really enjoy. But I get excited when, you know, like what I'm doing for Victoria Police is not my normal rate. Don't care at all.
Yeah.
Don't. It's not even an issue.
Yeah.
Just excited to be doing that. Because I think, I don't know why, I feel like it's going to lead to something good.
Yeah.
Or I feel like it might be a good experience for me and hopefully a good experience for them.
Yeah.
And I need to, you know, get off all those charges as well. So I feel that...
It's a contradiction.
What? What? Somebody's saying, I fucking knew it.
He's a criminal. So can't say that.
Everyone knows I'm joking, Melissa.
Yeah, but
okay.
You so can't say
all right. That. All right, everyone. I'm just kidding. There are no charges.
Oh, God.
And I just lost my gig.
I was going to say, you're going to lose that
They
gig.
Know. Let's all have a little bit of fun and
we're
not get to.
We're having a laugh.
So what was the highlight of your trip, if anything in particular? Or what did you learn? Or what connections did you make? Or what did you come back excited about?
So much. I mean, there were so many things. I think a few of them we touched on. One is the benefit of just being in the same room as someone without an expectation as to what's going to happen. Yeah. So Jen and I have spent hours and hours and hours and hours together, but we'd never really spent 5 days in a row for 12 hours a day in the same room.
Mm.
And the impact that can have and the benefit that can have to what we talked about earlier of just being around people, awesome people, things happen. It's awesome. So that was definitely one. One of the other things I really liked is just the idea of when you see the way other people approach their work or their problems or their situations or their life, you just get a different whole, it's like anytime you travel, you just get a whole different worldview or a whole different perspective on a different worldview, which makes you question, challenge, and think about your own worldview in a new way. And so like in New York, there's this huge, like palpable tension, what I felt like palpable tension around their political situation and the racism and all of the issues that that country is working through, it was like palpable. And so it makes you appreciate being somewhere like Australia where we don't necessarily have that quite the same political tension. And just like the gratefulness that you have for your situation and your life and your circumstance that we can sit down and have the conversation that we just had, which is we're trying to do work that we feel is generous regardless of, you know, the monetary return. That's not a reality for everyone. I get that. And we're very privileged that that is our reality. So it's a, every time I travel, I get that like gratitude for where we are and what we get to do. Yeah.
I reckon the ever-present challenge for all of us, wherever we are and whatever our job and is to manage self. Like is for me to manage me in the middle of whatever and wherever and with whomever, you know, is that whole, you know, what's in my control, what's not in my control. Well, what's not in my control is the political climate. What's not in my control is what people put on social media, the weather, what that dude over there thinks, what that lady says, you know, is that whole idea of how do I manage me in the middle of the unmanageableness of everything else? Yeah. And that's the, I've said this quite a bit lately, but it's probably worth repeating, is like we think we need to change our life. Sometimes we just need to change ourselves.
Totally.
Because when I am different, life is different. And that's not to say situations, circumstances don't ever need to change. But I think we have this, I don't know, fantasy or this misconstrued idea maybe that if my life will be better if I can just have that thing or change that thing or own that thing or and sometimes that may be the case. But it's trying to differentiate between, you know, what is an internal issue, void, problem, challenge, malaise, or what, do you like that word? Or what is, you know, a hole in my practical reality that I need to deal with, you know.
Yeah, I love that. I've been reading a lot of Pema Chodron. I don't know if you've read much of hers before. She's a Tibetan Buddhist and she's written, I don't know, 15-ish books and it's all about mindfulness essentially and meditation and awareness. And something she talks about, I was just reading it this morning, I just wrote it down, was this idea that the posture we should, like the posture of an enlightened society would be one where we show up and think essentially, how do I not cause harm to others? How do I not cause harm to myself? And how do I be useful? Like if you could take care of those three things, being mindful of the harm that you cause to others, being mindful of the harm we cause to ourselves and being useful, that would essentially create an enlightened society.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what you just spoke about, which is like managing yourself and the way you interact with others.
Yes.
And by extension, being useful.
And knowing what the you experience is like without being an insecure, overthinking, self-loathing weirdo. It's like, what is, and that's something that, I mean, that was one of my hardest lessons because, and it still is because.
I was going to say, I feel like I'm still learning this.
I'm, you know, I know that some people don't like me and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I don't like me and I'm me sometimes, often I don't like me. Sometimes I like me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get it. I get it. Yeah. I get it that you're annoyed. I get it. And I get it not necessarily because I think I'm doing something wrong in the moment, but I get it because everybody interprets things in their own unique way and everybody creates their own experiences. So I would be an idiot to expect that everyone will like me, resonate with me, connect with me.
Yeah.
And so I have to expect that.
Yeah.
And then not only expect it, but still love that person.
Yes.
Still go, it's okay. And, but really love that person.
Let's have a hug.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one of the really, really hard parts I find, and Pema talks about this, of mindfulness meditation, is like the better you get at it, the more mindful you become, the more awareness you have on where you're hurting people or where your blind spots, previously held blind spots, have hurt people in the past.
Yes.
And the realization that all of a sudden you see how you hurt that person and you get it. You're like, oh my gosh, I can see how I did that.
Yes.
And that's like the hardest part of becoming, you know, woke in air quotes or becoming more aware is the realization of where you've hurt people and the realization that you could see why they're hurt or why they're annoyed or why they're pissed off. And then like getting your head around that, can you still show up with love and kind and careness?
Yes.
Like that is the hard, hard part of mindfulness.
Yeah, I love
essentially.
That.
That's good. That's
like, that is good.
She's
dude.
So good.
Fucking hell, I'm putting that on a t-shirt. Melissa, jot that down, put my name on the bottom of it and cross out Pete.
Yeah.
But it's almost like that's where kindness and empathy and awareness kind of converge. Is it's like that's like the high level empathy is forget what I think, forget what I know, forget mm-hmm. what my reality is here for a moment. What's her reality? How does she, you know, this is, I have this constant conversation in business with managers and leaders about communication and the way that we, our intentions versus their experience.
Yes.
So my intention is I'm just going to give Pete some feedback. I'm just going to help him out a bit. Yeah. I'm just going to make life a bit easier for you. So I'm going to give you some feedback and some direction, a bit of encouragement. I might even inspire you because I'm pretty inspiring. Yeah. Right? And then I have a conversation with you and your experience is the opposite of everything that I thought I was giving you. But not only is that bad, the worst thing is I've got no fucking idea.
Yeah.
So now I walk away going, well, I just killed that. And you go away going, he's a dickhead.
Yeah.
And then you tell four other people. And on top of all of that, not only have I not fixed anything, but I don't know that I've created a bigger problem. Now, one of the questions I ask groups often is, does it matter what people think of us? And they don't know how to answer because they think it's, you know, and they'll go, no, it doesn't matter. Just be yourself. I'm like, well, I get that, but I disagree. Yeah. And here's why,
yeah.
You know, and there's a difference between, you know, having an awareness of what it's like to be, or trying to have an awareness of what it's like to be around me.
Yeah.
So I realize, and I get even embarrassed to say this, I realize people get intimidated around me only because I've been told that 35 times,
yeah.
135 times.
Yeah.
And I go, but I personally, I don't feel at all intimidating.
Yeah.
I look at other people and go, that dude's intimidating.
Right.
She's intimidating.
Yes.
I go, I'm not intimidating.
Yeah.
But when 100 people tell you, well, that's their experience, then you're being ignorant if you don't at least have that awareness.
Yeah.
So now I realize, and also I realize that sometimes my directness mm-hmm. doesn't work with some mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
Even if my motives are great, even if I'm coming from a place of love.
Yeah.
I'm telling you this because I want you to succeed.
Yeah.
I'm telling you this because I want you to build resilience. I'm telling you this because I care.
Yeah.
All that doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
If the net result for them is you just hurt my feelings, I'm never talking to you again, I'm going away.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's operating from that platform
yeah.
of, well, fuck, the only person who lives in my reality is me.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how good I think I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think this is what the whole point of empathy is, right? To what your point,
yes.
Which is, to me, empathy is about being curious. And to me, being curious is about seeking to understand. And so rather than coming in and saying, this is how I think I can make you better.
Mm.
It's like, can you engage in a conversation and ask a question, which is like, hey, Craig, what's on your mind right now?
Mm.
Or where are you stuck right now? What's the hard part right now?
Mm.
And getting a sense from them what that reality is
mm.
before we then paint it for them.
Mm.
And this is hard, obviously, but this idea of showing up curiously and with a posture of curiosity,
yes.
I think is what empathy is all about. And I think great managers should be able to do it. Great leaders, anyone working in any profession that involves other humans mm. should be seeking to understand
yes.
what's going on with the other person.
Yes.
Because it's probably not personal. It's probably that they are working through something unrelated to you
mm.
and we've come in and triggered that, or we've come in and not listened to them and they mm. feel unseen, so they just throw their hands up in the air and go, well, this guy's an idiot, he's not listening to me.
Mm.
So I think it's the hard work of doing the opposite, which is asking questions and holding space as mm. opposed to, you know, giving advice and talking over the top of people.
What does that mean to you, holding space? I hear you say that a lot. What yeah. does that mean?
I think it could say ask questions and shut up, or ask questions and be quiet. But mm. I think the distinction I would make with holding space
mm.
is it's a generous act and it's an active act.
Mm.
And so people can pretend to listen and be quiet,
mm.
but they're not listening. They're thinking mm. about what they're going to say next.
Yes.
So for
yes.
me, holding space is active. So I'm yes. holding it and I'm trying to understand it by listening, maybe mm. by jotting a couple of things down while you're talking so I don't forget them.
Mm.
But to me, it's the active piece as opposed mm. to, but I was quiet. Mm. Like I let them talk and it's mm. like, yeah, but you didn't listen.
Yeah.
You can mm. be quiet and not listen.
That's so true. Can
I just ask, you were talking before about noticing that blind spot that maybe in the past you hadn't noticed before.
Yeah.
How do you go with then, I guess, the emotional, the feeling of sitting with the feeling once you realize that I've been doing this all along.
Yeah.
And I've just realized I've done it. I didn't intend to, you know, be for somebody to be feeling that way as a result of my actions, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
How do you go with sitting with that? Because I know that often my initial reaction is to deflect or to get angry or to basically not sit with it very well. So have you got any strategies around
such
that?
A good question, Melissa. I feel like it's the $1 million question, because I think I would say that I too get the anger, the frustration, the fear, the doubt. They're like, oh, I'm such an idiot. And the sitting with it is the hard part. And so how I think about this, I guess, to try and get tactical about it, is like forgiving yourself for showing up based on what you knew at that particular time, unattached to like how you, like what you now see. That we can only, all we can do is show up in a way that we think we can be proud of in that moment. And what we know to be true is we'll make mistakes along the way. We'll find blind spots eventually. But that, can we sit there, and this goes to the idea of generosity. If I'm going into a hard situation, the only thing I can really attach myself to is how I show up in that situation. I can't be attached to hurting other people's feelings. I can't be attached to getting a desired outcome of that, because that will dictate the way I show up. The only thing I can do is show up in a way that I think I'm proud of.
Yeah.
And so if I can reflect on that moment and go, well, am I proud of the way I showed up based on the information I had in that moment? Yes. Okay. Well, then I have to try and let that go and learn from it. If the answer is no, there's work to do, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think this is, I mean, this is really hard. And this is the work. There's a really famous, she was a poker player, lady by the name of Annie Duke, who wrote a great book called Thinking in Bets. And she talks about a good decision doesn't lead to a good outcome. And so all we can do is be like comfortable with the decision we made in the moment based on the information we had. So an example, you might be playing blackjack and have a 90% chance of winning the hand. And so you decide to go all in and then you lose because there was a 10% chance you're going to lose.
Yeah.
And you reflect on that and go, like, was it a blind spot or did I make a good decision based on the information I had available? The answer is yes. Everyone would make that decision.
So a good decision doesn't necessarily equal a good outcome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So can you be proud of the decision you made? That's the question I would ask myself when I go, okay, there's the blind spot. Am I proud of the decision I made in that moment based on what I had? Yes. Okay. Well, wow. What a learning. Okay. Maybe I hurt someone. I'll apologize to them. And if the answer is no, then it's like, okay, well, again, I have to apologize to them and I have to do the work on myself to recognize if that happens again, here's how I might approach it differently. I don't know if that helps.
Good.
Yeah, I like it. You said something which you said what I was thinking, and I was thinking about the value and the importance and the skill, is it a skill, of being present, like truly present in a conversation.
Yeah.
So we're episode 143. Is that right? Is this 144?
Yeah.
Is it? Really?
Correct.
144. And like one of the things that I've gotten better at, because we're doing so many so often, is being present.
Yeah.
So before you and I came in here, or when we came in here, I'd put out a few ideas on neither of us have looked at that bit of paper.
We haven't at all.
Fuck that bit of paper.
That could be for next time.
Yeah. I just thought, well, here's the thing, a few things we might just chew the fat on, right? Yeah. We just started talking.
Yeah.
And there was a moment when we're 15 minutes in and I went, oh, we haven't even, and then I went, fuck those things, because where we are is good. And there's, you know, for me, one of the challenges over the years was, as you said, we're often thinking about while the next person's talking, or the other person talking, we're not really present. We're just thinking about what we're going to say because we care how we sound.
Yeah.
Then you, and when you are, you know, you're somebody who can string a few words together and you may be, you know, you're quite articulate, da-da-da-da, whatever. There's a real, especially if you're insecure, like I was for a lot of my life, where you need to prove yourself and you need to talk a fair bit and you need attention and all this shit. You actually are, you're very articulate perhaps, but you're a terrible communicator.
Yeah.
And there's a real skill as a teacher, as a coach, as a mum, as a dad, as a boss, as a manager, as a leader, as a human, really, to be able to be still and be present and talk only as much as you need to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the challenges that we have on a really practical level with the podcast is I can talk to somebody across the road at the cafe and they're really present.
Mm.
Then I get them in here, they're not present.
Interesting. Mm.
And they're distracted and they're scared and they're worried about, they're thinking about how do I sound and how do I look and what if he asks me a hard question, and they're anywhere but in the moment.
Yeah.
And it's, and we've done a few where I've gone, nah, and we've started again.
Wow.
And I've had to give that person a pep talk.
Yeah.
I would just make them, in a good way, go, okay, so you're thinking about 57 things except what I'm saying. You're not really here. You know, if we could replicate the conversation we had an hour ago at the cafe, bring that here.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden there's headphones and microphones and, you know, bits and pieces and you know, so that's a real...
Yeah.
It's interesting how people think, you know, the quality of the communication is sometimes about, you know, how articulate or verbose or, you know, charismatic or whatever somebody is. But it's really about, well, do you get them?
Did you listen? Did you respond?
Yeah. Are you connecting?
Yeah.
And if you might say fucking five words.
Yeah.
I've had coaching sessions where I don't know how many words the other person said, but I'm going to go 20 or 30,000 and I've maybe said 50.
Yeah, me too.
And they're like, oh, that was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like you're a gun. I'm like,
talk about feeling like an imposter. That's the moment I feel like an imposter, right? Is when you have a coaching session.
Yeah.
And you ask three questions
yeah.
and they fill an hour
yeah.
and you finish and they go, wow, that was so helpful. Thank you so much. And you're like, I didn't do anything. I asked you three questions. But this is where that idea of holding space is an active thing. Like it is a genuine active act and a super generous one and a really hard one that a lot of people like can struggle with.
Mm. Well, that is the Paul Check interview.
Yeah.
I literally said 9 words.
I think you raise a good point though, like this idea of the ways in which we can practice something like holding space in the different aspects of our life. Like, I think what's interesting about the example you use is in a cafe, it's fine, but behind a mic, it's a bit tricky or I get a bit of stage fright. And I think about this a lot in terms of like my work, if it was a Venn diagram of like coaching, you know, podcasting, speaking, the center point, the thing that overlaps with everything and even in my personal relationships is holding space and asking questions. Mm. And I think that's true of anybody, that we can practice holding space with our kids,
yes.
with our husband, with our wife, with our, you know, our significant other or our best friend or our podcast co-host or the podcast guest, that you can practice this, or the barista every day and that you don't show up as a different person when you're having coffee as when you do when you're recording a podcast. Can you like try and show up as the same person always?
Yeah.
I think that's... Yeah, it's a practice. Yeah,
and I think that Paul Taylor spoke about this.
He's brilliant.
The Irishman, when he spoke about when you get home and you put your hand on the doorknob and essentially just to reset.
Yes.
Just to reset and go, which me am I bringing?
Yeah.
Which me is going to come in the door?
Yeah.
Just hang the fuck on. Yeah, you've had a big day. No, yeah, you're important and you did all these deals and Cool. Yeah. Your kids don't give a fuck about that. Your wife don't give a fuck about that.
Yes.
You need to... You know, or your partner or whoever it is, whatever gender you are and whoever it is you're coming home to, you know, hit the pause button, press reset, take a breath, get over your ego and your own bullshit. And if you're tired, suck it up a little bit, go in and just be your best self.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting thing.
I agree. Yeah. I think that, I mean, personally, I think we might have spoken about it on one of the podcasts I was on. Is that's one of the things I think about and struggle with the most. I think Hamish Blake has talked about it as well.
Yes.
Which is who gets the best version of Pete or who gets the best version of Craig.
Yeah.
And the honest answer at times is my clients.
Yes.
And not necessarily my family or my girlfriend or my partner or my friends.
Yes.
You know, so really being mindful of that, of who gets the best version of me, I think is, a really interesting question.
Yeah. And it's something that I think, you know, the whole thing of being more self-aware, and it's not about, I think there's a fine line too. You don't want to be constantly analyzing yourself and reanalyzing, and because then you end up beating yourself up and you become really fucking annoying.
Totally.
But I do think that just having an awareness of the you experience and literally which person is showing up in whatever situation.
Yeah.
And I remember about, I don't know, it was maybe a feel a bit guilty even saying this, but I remember about 6 or 8 months into training Johnny.
Mm.
Do you remember? I'd had lots of stuff on, and one day I turned up, Johnny, forgive me, but I didn't have a great attitude.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I was like, oh, I've got lots on today and I don't really have time for this. And and there was probably a bit of resentment, which is all me, not him.
Yeah.
And I was about 3 or 4 minutes in and I went, you're a prick. Like, you don't have to be here.
Yeah.
Like, have a look at what he's dealing with. You have zero problems, you fucking pussy. Like, I just in this moment had it was like I was outside myself looking at myself.
Yeah.
Being a 3 out of 10 me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think to be able to have that kind of, or to try at least to have that awareness of, you know, if you can't turn up and do it well, don't turn up.
Mm.
You know, or if you can't be your best self, you know, or if you're having a bad day, you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
But maybe just say that to someone, you know what, it's been a shit morning, I'm sorry. Now, yeah. I've had to say that to Melissa 37 times.
Yeah.
Where sometimes I'm not mad at you. I'm not, you know, I'm not angry. I'm just exhausted.
Yeah.
And I'm just feeling fractured. So I won't be hilarious for the next 10 minutes and yeah. I won't be.
It'll only take 10 though.
Yeah.
But I think that's really important around like this idea that clear is kind. And so, and building on that, the idea that like without information, as humans, we create stories.
Yes.
And so if I don't have all of the information about the fact that you're feeling crap, I, maybe Melissa, in this moment, I'm going to tell myself a story that I've annoyed Craig.
Yes.
And like that happens every day with thousands of people. It's like, oh, I must have pissed that person off.
Yeah.
But actually, if you came in and said, hey, I'm having a bit of a shit morning.
Yeah.
Just give me a minute.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you go, okay, I get it. I have shit morning sometimes.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden there's no stories that are being created, which then cause a rift down the path, down the track. So I think that clear is kind. If you can communicate that to someone, because it's okay to feel not okay sometimes. Mm. We all do.
Yeah.
And so actually like almost communicating that, getting on the front foot with that.
Yeah. So what's the plan for you? So we're heading into Chrissy. Do you, in terms of your work and the way that you kind of self-manage with work, with family, with girlfriend, with physical health, wellness, energy, mind, do you have a set time off? Do you take head off for 4 weeks a couple of times a year, or what do you do?
It's a good question. I haven't quite got a really solid system in place for that yet.
Yeah.
I had this year, I took, I want to say probably 4 weeks where I more or less didn't work. I still did a bit of work because I can, because I got a laptop, which is okay. I mean, I'm okay with doing a little bit of work. There's like this idea that I'd rather create a life that I don't feel like I need to escape than to go on a holiday and escape work.
Yes.
And so I do recognize though that I have moments where I definitely need downtime, which might mean just checking a few things for half an hour a day, which I've done for, I want to say 3 or 4 weeks this year. Christmas for me will be mainly between the Christmas and New Year break, I'll take off. But a lot of my work is with North America, and North America doesn't really shut down until like their summer, which is June, July.
Yeah.
So I will go back to probably to Ocean Grove, spend some time with family, catch up with the folks, my nieces, and then come early Jan, be, you know, back into it.
We were talking last night, and I've spoken about this before too, but I think you and I maybe have even spoken about it. So work-life balance versus work impact.
Yeah.
So the impact that your work has. So not so how many hours do you work, but rather how do those hours that you do work impact you?
I love that.
So with the idea being, well, if I'm doing 70 hours of something I love, fuck, I'm great.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm doing 10 hours a week of something I detest every minute,
yes.
I'm not great.
Yes.
And I think, you know, like I don't think I've ever said this out loud, but this is going to sound strange. I think for some people, holidays are overrated. Let me tell you why. Because, like you said, I don't feel like I need to escape my life.
Yeah.
Like I never go, oh, fuck, I need a holiday. And I rarely feel stressed.
Yeah.
And I often feel grateful and fortunate and blessed. And I go, and I love where I live. I love the situation.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate. I have a little beach house down the bloody peninsula that I can zap off to. And I spend lots of the year traveling to places and on planes and in airports. I have zero desire to get on a plane and go anywhere.
Yeah.
And yeah. often when I do, I'm somewhere and I go, you know what? My joint's better than here. Why the fuck did I come here? Right? But if I want to line my jocks and watch Everybody Loves Raymond for an afternoon, a fucking marathon, I will.
What a show.
You know, but and I just think that we go, we have this idea that, all right, well, if I move myself to this location
yep.
for this amount of time at this time of the year,
yeah.
it'll be better.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got three kids and a missus, I get that.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm like, and I think for a lot of people, we feel this kind of almost this social construct of, well, you really need to, do you?
Yeah.
Do you have to? Is yeah. there, does everyone have to? Do we all have to do the same thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. This idea of like, I really need a holiday has always yeah. grated me.
Yeah.
In the same way that, thank God it's Friday, has always really yeah. grated me. Because I'm like, what, are you wishing away
yeah.
your life? Like, oh, I hate Mondays. It's like, I mean,
yeah.
hating a day is like yeah. a pretty extreme yeah. posture. Like,
yeah. What is that about?
Exactly. Like, what's the underlying, what are you hiding from, you know, yeah. that we need to talk about? Or what is it that you could do to change that?
Mm.
And so, yeah, I agree. I see value in spending less time focusing on certain things, on reactive tasks in particular, like email. But that's usually the time when all of a sudden my proactive brain will kick in and I'll probably bust out a whiteboard and start like coming up with ideas.
Yeah.
And so you're technically still working in that sense. Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I did a gig in Fiji a few years ago and I literally got there at, I don't know, 9 o'clock at night, was 8 million degrees.
Humidity 99%.
Fucking hell. I was just swimming in my own body fluids. I went to bed, turned the air conditioning on 11.
11.
Got up, had I don't know what I did. I had to do a breakfast keynote.
Yeah.
Did the breakfast keynote, went to the airport, flew home. Oh, really? Right? And everyone's like, oh my God, you're in Fiji. And I go, all right, let me paint the picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I am not allowed in the sun because I've had 27, literally 27 basal cell carcinomas cut off my body. That's yeah. first thing. Second thing, I don't love the heat, right? I don't love it. I don't hate it and I'm grateful for it. I'm not whinging, but I just don't love it. Third thing, I don't know one person in Fiji. Yeah. That's the third thing. Fourth thing, I hate lying on the beach. I'm never doing it. Fifth thing, don't drink. Don't yeah. drink alcohol.
So what are you going to do?
Don't
in
do
Fiji?
Drugs. Yeah. Don't smoke. Don't know anyone. And my joints 50 times better than the room I was staying in. So I'm going home.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, yeah, but wouldn't you like, I go, what, lie by the pool?
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah, doesn't fucking, for me anyway,
yeah.
zero appeal.
Yeah, again, I think.
Again, that's not right or wrong.
No, just, no, no, but it's self-awareness, right?
Which oh, yeah. is like, oh, I don't understand.
It's just I think this idea of being self-aware of what we like
yeah.
and don't like and what yeah. the you experience is yeah. like, is still so underrated because mm. What we default to if we don't think about what we value mm. is what society tells us we should value, mm. which is, of course you'd lie there and do nothing for a week, Craig. That's like, that's the point.
Yep. Yep.
But it's like, but no, for me, mm. that's not fueling me in any way. In fact, mm. it's probably stressing me out.
Mm.
So why would I do that to mm. myself?
And I was talking to somebody, I think it was on the weekend, who just got back from Bali, and I said, what'd you do? And they went fucking laid by the pool and the beach and for 8 days, and how was it? And I said, how was it? They're like, fucking great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great.
Love it. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what
yeah.
you should be doing.
Yes.
If you love that, do that.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not suggesting anyone does what I do. Yeah. I'm suggesting we figure out what works for us.
Yeah.
It's like, and I think there's that, like we have this, I was talking to the group last night about, you know, there's this almost formulaic mindset, and Paul Cech's touched on this a little bit, Paul Cech, that we go, oh, okay, so there's a formula to eat, and there's a formula to relax, and a formula to have yeah. a holiday. And no, there's not. There's your formula. There's
yeah.
not a.
Yeah.
A suggests there's one.
Yeah.
No, there's fucking 8 million.
Yeah.
And you need to figure out what works for you.
Yes.
Because, you know, what's going to relax you or stress you is unique to you.
Yeah.
What you're going to love to do or what's going to bore you or how much sleep you need or mm-hmm. how many micros and macros you need is yeah. not what I need. Totally. Your physiology is not mine. My mind's not yours. Your spiritual beliefs aren't mine. Your, yeah. you know, it's this whole kind of part of the excitement for me of this opening the door on possibilities and potential is helping people understand how to navigate their own journey and learn their own truths about what works for you.
Yes.
So, you know, it's like I don't have a plan for you. I have some ideas and thoughts and strategies. Mm. I've got some stories. I've got some experience I can download.
Yeah.
But what I want you to do is see, you know, Pete and I are going to have a conversation for an hour and a bit. You're going to listen.
Yeah.
And 90% of it will be mildly interesting, but there might be 10% of it where you go, fuck, they're talking to me about me.
Yeah.
So take that, do something with that, step out of the theory into the action, see what happens.
Yeah.
And that, you might need to tweak it.
Yes. And that 10% will be different for each person.
Correct.
That 10% for Joe, the listener, might be like that middle bit.
Yeah.
The other 10% might be the joke I made about cheesecake. Like, there's all of those different
not parts. Funny. Not funny.
I just thought I'd have to re-bring the cheesecake.
Yeah, good on you. Yeah, look at you being fucking hilarious. Where are we at, Melissa?
An hour and 14.
Wow. Well, I think we're done, son. You've been amazing yet again.
This has been great.
You've been amazing. How do people contact you for some coaching, for some consulting, for some corporate speaking? How do people get you?
Humanperiscope.com is my website, or peter@humanperiscope.com is my email. Everything is on there.
Mm.
Feel free to reach out.
It's been great, mate. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks. Love your guts. Me. And thank you for sharing.
Of course. Likewise. I'll see you guys at the conference.
Fucking thank up. You. Don't fuck it up. The addict in your family might need you to take the first step for them. They Have Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment has the experience, staff, resources, and processes to help you help your loved one. DAHAB's model of intensive rehabilitation has revolutionised the practice of addiction treatment in Australia. Registered with the DHHS, Department of Health and Human Services, DAHAB now offers rehabilitation programs for drug, alcohol, and gambling addiction, and is a private health fund approved treatment service. So if you or someone you care about is fighting addiction, there is hope. Addiction is treatable. Recovery is possible. Just ask me, call. And there is light at the end of the tunnel. DAHAB Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment. Call DAHAB on 1-800-329-422 or learn more at DAHAB, DAYHAB, or one word, .com.au.